Whoa! General Manager Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford is getting you ready for the Super Bowl by giving away 65-inch TVs with every purchase of a vehicle at Bill Curry Ford. That's right, every vehicle purchase at Bill Curry Ford. Head to BillCurryFord.com, see the offer at JoeBucksFan.com. Every vehicle purchased gets a 65-inch TV. Free stretch listeners, you're hearing it first.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton. It's the Week 15 edition of the show. Lots to get to today, both dealing with last Sunday and this Sunday, but not as much about either of those days as about many future Sundays to come. I'm not going to be terribly concerned today with what's going on the field at this point. We're going to talk a little bit about the Saints game and a little bit about the Ravens game, just for a few minutes, but you know, it's not really about that anymore, and I'm sad to say because this seems to be the case every year, but right now the bigger picture is the thing, and I'm not, again, that concerned about the Ravens game on Sunday at this point. I don't think anything happening right now matters all that much because I've seen all I need to see. Perhaps you feel the same way. So we'll get to that today. Email me if you want to. My email address, as always, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Or get me on Twitter @BobbyGameDay. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. Bill Curry is Tampa's first family of Ford, and they are proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles that includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, plus a 10-year roadside assistance program, plus the 1-year complimentary service where you just drive it in and they take care of anything, oil change, whatever, for the first year. See all the details if you want to get all this again at the website, BillCurryFord.com. Curry is spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Go down there in person, see Sean Sullivan. He's the new general manager at Bill Curry Ford. Say me, Bobby Fenton. Say Joe Bucks fan. Say the Free Stretch. Say Joe Bucks fan. That's the safest way. And you will get the Joe Bucks fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing. So you can go to the website and check out everything they got, everything you might be interested in. Go down there in person, see Sean or one of their great salespeople. Ask for the Joe Bucks fan discount. You get that on top of everything else, plus the lifetime warranty. They have proudly served this area for 58 years, and they're just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, so start shopping today. Again, you can check out the website at BillCurryFord.com. And I don't know if there's a website that's as good as BillCurryFord.com for NFL head coaching candidates, but if there is, complete with transparent pricing and everything, I hope the Glazers are searching it right now, because I think it's become apparent we're at that point. As a Bucks fan right now, not that I'm going to tell you how to live your life or what your thoughts should be, but as a Bucks fan right now, and if you're the Glazers, as the owners of this team, as the stewards of this franchise, we need to be thinking about what the next step is. I don't think that's a big secret anymore. We talked last week on the show about how, oh, well, you know, does it really matter what happens in these final four games? I mean, if they go 3-1 as opposed to 1-3 in these four games, does that change the direction of the franchise forever going forward based on, well, we keep the coach if they do this well? What about 2-2? I don't know. I didn't think that should be the case going into this past week's game. I certainly don't think that should be the case now. And listen, I kind of bought into it for a few minutes on Sunday. If you heard my show last week, you heard me saying every single thing about that game lined up in the Saints' favor. They had lost to the Bucs twice in a row while going something like 12-3 against the rest of the NFL, or maybe it was 13-2 against the rest of the NFL. They'd gone 0-2 against the Bucs in the last calendar year. That points to a Saints win, or in my opinion, pointed to one before. They were coming off their only loss since the Bucs beat them in Week 1 to Dallas, whereas the Bucs were coming off two wins in a row. When you have a better team coming off a loss versus a not-as-good team coming off wins, it favors the better team that's less likely to lose consecutive games, while the team that's not as good is maybe due for a loss. Simple logic. So that one pointed against the Bucs, I thought. Then you had, of course, the long week. The Saints were playing on Thursday night when they lost to the Cowboys last week, so they had the extra 3 days of preparation and rest. And they're playing for, again, potential number one seed in the NFC, and meanwhile the Bucs are going to go sweep them. It just didn't seem possible, okay? And I said all that last week, and yet, like a lot of you, I'm sure, the game started on Sunday. We get the ball first. One of the most efficient, crisp, just drop-dead, gorgeous drives of the season that Jameis Winston and company put together on the opening drive. And we go tit, tit, tic-tac-toe, boom, down the field. And it's 7-0 before you can get the popcorn bag open. And not because of some big play or something crazy. Just the Bucs just methodically went down there, dismantled the Saints defense, and made it look easy. Fast forward a little while later, it was 14-3 at halftime. Jameis Winston had capped a 10-quarter stretch the previous two games plus the first half of this game. That was probably the best 10-quarter stretch that he's played since he's been with the Bucs. And I'm up there in my house, giddy, over the moon, thinking, you know what? Maybe I was wrong. Maybe the Bucs just own the Saints. Maybe we can do this. And maybe if they do this, maybe they'll pull off some sort of a stunner on the road in Baltimore and do it again in Dallas. And maybe they'll be playing for a playoff berth somehow against Atlanta in Week 17. Like, I let myself go there for just a few minutes on Sunday. Now, when the Bucs eventually crumbled, when the Saints started to act like a team who's supposed to be one of the best in the NFL and certainly the best or one of the best in the NFC, when they started to act like that and the action on the field started to more closely resemble what we expected it to before the game started and the Bucs eventually lost 28-14, none of that was surprising, and I wasn't even particularly angry. I mean, again, it's not that my expectations are low for this franchise, but I am realistic. And at no point did I think the Bucs had the game wrapped up or anything like that. Plus, I'm just used to this type of thing, I guess, being a Bucs fan. But with that said, if anything, if you had any doubt before, which I don't think you should have, to me there is no doubt now that I think the franchise is ready to make the next step. And I even put out a tweet. My good friend, I've never actually met him, but he's my Twitter friend. I'll meet him one day. And a guy who I enjoy his work at the Tampa Bay Times, Thomas Bassinger, tweeted, I think it might have been sarcasm, I couldn't tell. He tweeted, "Bucks now in firm control of this game, should be a W, and if it is, oh man." Now again, I don't know if he meant that or not. Even at 14-3, I didn't feel like it was firm control. But I retweeted that and I said, sarcastically, "I don't know what's happening or what anything means anymore. Fire everybody, keep everybody. Fire only some, but keep others. We're good and we should have been better all along. Or we sucked all along, but we're playing over our heads. None of this. All of this." Basically, that's how I felt. I've gone back and forth through so many different lines of thinking over the past, well, not just this year, over the past several years. Oh man, we can do this. We're only a few players away. We're not that bad. Oh my God, we're terrible. Blow everything up. Oh, we're actually pretty good, but we're undercoached. Oh, we're actually pretty bad, but our coaching is keeping us in. You know, all these different things. And enough. Enough. We're done with all that. And this is nothing against Dirk Cutter personally. I don't dislike him. And I don't know what's going to happen with Jason Light. I mean, he might stay. But I think at this point, we're looking for that next step. We were 4-9 through 13 games last year. Here we are now through 13 games this year at 5-8. I don't know if you kept everything the way it is and just tried to quote-unquote get better, what you would expect to change. I mean, Dirk Cutter's had the ear of Jameis Winston for 4 years now, if you count his year as the offensive coordinator before he took over as head coach. Obviously, it's not all Dirk Cutter's fault. Jameis Winston's made a lot of mistakes, but I think we've seen how. I mean, I just don't. There's no growth. And Jameis has gotten better. I mean, I shouldn't say there's no growth. I mean, he's obviously gotten better, I think, from when he never played in the NFL before, his first 4 years. But whatever it is that we've done, I don't think will change next year where we'll magically be 11-5 or something like that. And I don't even mean like eking out like 0-9-7 or hey, we're still in it at 7-7 with two games left and Maybe we can grab the sixth wild card. I want to be one of the big boys. You can already look at the standings now and figure out who the big boys are, who the guys are that are going to be playing, not just in the first weekend of January, but I'm talking about late January. You know, this wild card race is getting all the attention right now because you got the Vikings at 6-5-1. You got like four teams at 6-6, which the Bucs could have somehow been one of if they had beaten the Saints. And yet, I mean, when I look at the NFC playoff picture, I'm not getting past. I'll give the Bears. Okay, you got the Saints, the Rams, the Bears. Those are the top three seeds at 9-4. And even Dallas and Seattle at 8-5, I'll give outside chances to maybe win a playoff game. They'll be playing lower seed, or at least in Dallas's case, they'll be playing lower seeded teams at home in the first round. But Seattle and Dallas could very well play each other. Whoever wins that game, along with the Bears, Rams, and Saints, you know, I'm not looking at, oh, Minnesota, what can they do? Can they make some noise if they get in? Carolina, Philadelphia, I've already written all them off. And maybe I'll be wrong. It's happened before. Six seeds have done things. But same thing with the AFC. Get out of here with Baltimore. Get out of here with the Colts. Get out of here with the Dolphins or any of these teams. It's the Chiefs. It's the Patriots. They're still there. The Chargers, even though they might be a five seed, or whoever loses the game tonight. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon. Whoever loses the game tonight on Thursday Night Football, which I'm fired up for a good Thursday night game, between the Chiefs and the Chargers, that team could be something like 13-3 and be a fifth seed, which the NFL's playoff format is ridiculous. I love the idea of six teams. I love the first round buys, wild card. That's all great. But what they should do, winning your division, it should guarantee you a playoff spot. I agree with that. Even if you're, let's say, the seventh best team, but you won your division, fine. Okay, you're one of the six teams. But the idea that the division winners are all the top four teams automatically is ridiculous. Every single year, there's a division winner who's like 9-7. It's even happened at 8-8 before. And every single year, there's a team that didn't win its division that's like 11-5 or even 12-4, or in this case, with the Chargers and Chiefs. If the Chargers win especially, they'll both be 10-3. One of them could go 13-3, or they'll both be 11-3, excuse me. So, I mean, take the four division winners automatically, I agree with that, and take the two wild cards, but then seed them just according to record and tiebreakers. So you could be the sixth seed and still be a division winner. You're in the playoffs, but this guarantee of a home game and hosting on wild card weekend, I don't agree with. But anyway, my point is, the whole point of all that, even if the Bucs had beaten the Saints, or even if they had won one earlier in the year that we thought they could have, and even if they were sitting there right now, and we do this crap every single year, I'm so sick of it. Oh, well, there's a 12% chance, 12.4, if the Bucs win this game and then they get some help. I don't want to hear about that crap. I want to hear about how we're playing for a potential number one seed, and we lock up the division if we win and somebody... That's what I want to hear. Those are the scenarios I want to be reading about. Not, oh, well, it's 7-7, there's a chance, and all that crap. That doesn't get it done, okay? I mean, it keeps it more interesting. But I think this roster has, and I'm not saying the whole team's where it needs to be, obviously. So, my mind is made up. And that goes for whatever happens in these final three games. The Glazers, okay, if you want to ask me to rank the most important people in the Buccaneers franchise right now. All people, players, coaches, staff, person, administration, whatever. You know, Jameis is obviously up there. You've got any number of players you could name. I don't think anybody on the coaching staff is right now just because of the uncertainty. But the most important people in this organization right now are the Glazers, who are faced with a huge decision, not just in what to do moving forward, which I think is to make a change, but then what change to make. And, you know, I've ripped the Glazers a lot on this show in the past. Ever since the old man passed away and the Suns have been in charge, things haven't gone well for the Bucks as a whole. That's what people are going to judge you on. Never mind the whole thing with the uniforms, which I've said my piece on many times, and I won't get into that now. But about decision-making and things like that. But I'll say this for the Glazers. They do try. They're not absentee owners. You know, there's a group of people who will say, oh, well, they're on their way to soccer now. They're focused on that, blah. They don't even care. I'm not one of those people. I will rip the Glazers for decisions they've made, but I won't rip them for their efforts because, I mean, if you look back over history, I mean, they've made changes. Going after Gruden, I mean, that was, of course, when the old man was still alive, but, you know, doing what they did to get John Gruden. And then firing John Gruden, which I was genuinely surprised. I remember that day in 2008, we had been 9-2, headed for the playoffs. They lost 5 in a row to end the year, 9-7. It didn't look great for Gruden, given the way that season ended and given that the Bucs hadn't won a playoff game since the Super Bowl up to that point, which, by the way, that's still true. But my point is, I remember that day and hearing about it and being, like, genuinely surprised, like, wow, the Glazers, like, those guys are, like, they'll cut your ass, whether you're a player or coach, whatever. They're going after it. Like, I couldn't believe they fired Gruden. I thought he'd get another year. But they did it. I remember when Lovie got fired. I was really surprised. Like, I wasn't pro Lovie or anything, but I remember when he got fired and thinking, no, he's not getting fired. Like, it hasn't been long enough. He's getting one more year. And the Glazers, boom, they moved. They moved. You look at the training facility just built and all that stuff. The upgrades to the stadium, and I'm not naive. I qualify all this. I know they're using taxpayer money for all this stuff because of the deal they got 20 years ago. I mean, I'm not out of my mind, okay? But still, my point is, not to call them saints or something like that, my point is that, I mean, they give a crap. They're out there to win. They haven't done a very good job of it, of course, but I don't think they're these people that are just going to let, you know, like what Cincinnati's done with Marvin Lewis and things like that. I mean, I ain't the Glazers' style. So I think they will do something. And I won't be surprised the way I was when I heard about Lovie or when I heard about John Gruden when the move eventually gets made. Now, Jason Light, I don't know. But the Glazers right now need to be thinking about their next move, evaluating candidates, talking to people, agents, whatever. And I'm sure they're doing all this. And we're going to have time to get into the whole thing as far as names, candidates, things like that. I've had some emails sent to me already from some listeners, and I appreciate all of you guys. I mean, the passion is there from the fan base, and it's been fun interacting with a few of you. I got an email from a guy, Dominion, who has been listening, and I appreciate you, Dominion, emailing me. I hope I pronounced that right. But he likes David Shaw, he mentioned. I think that's a good guy to have on the list. Not that I think he'll be the coach, but he's a name that comes up every time, every year with the NFL. Seems like a West Coast guy. He's done an amazing job at Stanford, but he has an NFL pedigree. Put him on the list. Talk to him. DeFilippo just got fired by the Vikings. I guess the bloom's off that rose, huh? Not necessarily. The Vikings offense was terrible against Seattle the other night, and they've had some struggles lately. I don't think Kirk Cousins is all that great, first of all. Second of all, DeFilippo didn't get along that well. I don't want to say I know, like, I wasn't there or anything, but from the understanding of common knowledge is that, you know, he and Zimmer didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and that is evidenced by the fact that Zimmer moved on him so rapidly and so suddenly in the middle of a playoff race like he did. That doesn't mean DeFilippo's a bad coach. You can look at him. Hell, Todd Monken, you know, try another cutter, version of cutter again. Eric Bieniemy, who's the Chiefs offensive coordinator, he does not call the plays. That's Andy Reid. But neither did the Bears coach, Matt Nagy. So, you know, they've had a few guys. I mean, there's my point on all this in mentioning this. Oh, Vic Fangio from the Bears defensive coordinator, who is 60. He's been wanting to be a head coach, who has done nothing but just create incredible defenses out of both something and not so much. I mean, he had incredible talent back in San Francisco when they were doing their thing with Harbaugh. He did it again with the Bears before they had who they have now, and now they've gotten even better. They're the best defense in the league. And, you know, there's no formula for this. People are saying, oh, you got to get the hot, young offensive mind. You got to find the next McVay. Well, obviously that worked for the Rams, but that doesn't mean that's the formula now. Maybe that guy's out there. But maybe it's an older, crusty defensive coordinator who's looking to get his shot as a head coach. You know, maybe it's somebody, I mean, maybe it's a college guy like David Shaw. There's no formula. People think, oh, well, we just have to find the blueprint that other successful teams have used, and we can use it too. Doesn't work that way all the time. Sometimes it does. But the next great head coach that isn't already a head coach, whoever that is, could come from any variety of backgrounds. And there's no formula to identifying him, and quite honestly, it probably takes a lot of luck to identify him. I mean, when the Rams hired McVay, who's great, I, like a lot of people, were probably like, wow, I mean, nothing against, I'm a millennial on the tail end of it. Not really. I'm like 38. Millennials are probably like 35 and younger. But say, I'm all for young guys getting hired for stuff, although I'm starting to feel old in other aspects. Sometimes I feel young, and sometimes I feel old, depending on what facet of life I'm participating in at any given time. Physically, I feel really young. Then some professions, I look around, I feel old. Other professions, I feel young. It just depends. But my point is, with an NFL head coach, Sean McVay is obviously incredibly young. And Sean McVay is a guy, when they hired him, I was like, really? And you see what's happening there. There's some other guys who look like just check every box. They're the perfect guy for a gig like that. It hasn't worked out. So we don't know. And we'll do more shows, again, once the offseason hits. And, actually, it won't even be the offseason for that long. I think this head coaching hire, after the Glazers do it, whenever they do it, if they do it, and I think they will, it's not going to go on for weeks and weeks and weeks. But that's why right now is important. That's why those guys, the Glazers, are the most important guys. And it always starts at the top, so it's not unique to say that now. But especially now, it's time for this organization to go ahead and make a move. I got another email from Drew. I'd put out there a tweet a while back saying, what do we think about Cutter? Do you think, even through all this, now that this was halftime of the Saints game on Sunday, where I texted a friend of mine and I said, hey, honestly, aside from just what's going on in the immediate right now, this first half of football, forget that. I'm just saying in general, what do you think about Cutter? He and I hadn't talked about it yet. This is a guy I trust, guy I know. And he says, quote, no, he has no control over the team or Jameis, 4 years with him now. The Baltimore game next week will bring everything into focus. Little did he know that the second half of the Saints game was probably enough to also bring everything into focus. We'll see about the Baltimore game, which, again, I'm not that concerned about. But whatever it is, predicting the future is so hard for everybody. Nobody has a handle on it. That's why luck plays such an important role. But I do know this. If we keep things the same, why would we expect anything not to be the same? And the way it's been, obviously, is not good enough. And I don't even think Dirk Cutter thinks he's keeping his job. They asked him about the London game. The Bucks got, we'll talk about that in a second. The Bucks got picked to host a foreign or international game, I should say, this year, coming up, 2019. And they asked Dirk Cutter about it, and of course he knows he can't answer a question about 2019 without sounding ridiculous, because he probably won't be here. So he was like, oh, well, I'm worried about Baltimore right now. That's not my concern, which is what I would say, too, if I thought I was getting fired. Even if I didn't think I was getting fired, I probably would have said something similar to that. But he clearly, if you heard his answer to the question, does not sound like a guy who thinks he's going to be here, and with good reason. As far as that international game goes, since 2019 is the most exciting thing to look forward to for the Bucks right now. We're not going to know the schedule till late spring, but they did name the five teams that will be the home teams that are giving home games from their home stadiums and playing them in an international venue instead. They are the Relocation Three, the Rams and Chargers, who are doing this every year until they get their new stadium built in LA. The Raiders, who are trying to be in Oakland as little as possible since they're leaving for Vegas. And then, of course, the Jags, who always play in London. The fifth team is the Bucks. Now, this isn't a coincidence, and it's not a surprise. The deal is, the NFL wants these international games. They're going to keep playing them. And yet, people aren't exactly, raising their hand going, ooh, 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 me. They're not trying to do that just to get picked. People don't want to give up home games. And the NFL financially makes it worth your while and all that. But point is, if you get a Super Bowl, that's one of the concessions you have to make. So it's one of those give something to get something. So one of the ways they convince NFL teams to do this, they say, hey, if you are picked to host a Super Bowl, you can't have it unless you agree to go on foreign soil and play a game. The Bucks have done this twice. It was back in 2009 against the Patriots and 2011 against the Bears. Lost both of them. Those were both bad years for the Bucks anyway. They lost a lot of games, and those were two of them. Those were both in London. Now, they're saying, out of these five teams, there's going to be one game in Mexico City and the other one's in London. or it could be 2 and 3. I think it's just 1 in Mexico City, though. So the odds are, just mathematically, that it will be London. Never mind that they'll probably use West Coast teams. Like the, I think it'll be either the Rams, Raiders, or Chargers that do the Mexico City game. So for all intents and purposes, it's going to be the Bucks in London in 2019. They have 8 home games on the schedule, as you know. And we know the opponents for 7 of them in perpetuity because of the NFL schedule formula. So we already know we're playing Atlanta, Carolina, and New Orleans at home. They're in the division. As was pointed out, it's doubtful, although it's not unprecedented, but it's doubtful that the league would put a division game at a neutral site and just call it a home game. I don't think they would do that. So probably cross Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans off. The other 5 home games next year are Arizona, San Francisco from the NFC West, who the NFC South is paired up with next year. Then the NFC South is paired up with the AFC South as well. So we get Houston and Indianapolis. So Arizona, San Francisco, Houston, and Indy. And then you've also got whoever finishes in the same spot in the standings in the NFC East as the Bucks do. Bucks can go anywhere from 2nd to 4th in the NFC South, depending on what happens in these final 3 games. And so they could play the 2nd, 3rd, or 4th place finisher from the NFC East at home, which looks like it'll probably be Philly, New York, or Washington. So either way, and we could speculate, we'll find out in the spring. If you're curious about it, I believe Arizona played in London pretty recently, as did Houston and Indy. San Francisco looks like a decent bet. But again, it's hard to say. And then Greg Allman, who covers the Buccaneers for The Athletic, pointed out, and this is intriguing, not that I'm saying I'd want this, but the Jags are also a Bucs opponent next year. The Bucs play at Jacksonville. So if Jacksonville's giving up a home game to play in London, you could conceivably have the Bucs play their home game against one of their home scheduled teams, then stay in London and play again the next week against the Jags, only the Bucs would be the road team in that one. And then you've got not having to come. You know, you can kill a few birds with one stone there. You'd have to have fewer teams traveling to London because you got one that's already there. And I don't, again, that's speculation. Greg Allman pointed that out on Twitter. It's intriguing. I'm not sure if it'll happen. But either way, something to keep an eye on. And of course, I always love talking about schedules and stuff like that, and we'll get to more of that as this season or as the off-season progresses. They always do the schedule release in the late spring. One thing I know, when that schedule comes out, I'd love to see the Bucs on Monday Night Football, on Sunday Night Football. I always love those types of things, and like most years, and like this year, it probably won't be the case. They'll get a cursory national TV game, and they'll be playing Sunday at 1 a lot of times. And that's going to be the case until we make some changes. Now, as far as important people in the Buccaneers franchise, like I was saying, the Glazers being the most important ones right now with the decisions they have to make, but Jameis Winston, who is going to be back next year, I don't think there's any question. I don't think it's even an issue that he is going to be the guy, and then we can talk about this whole thing with the long-term extension more in the future. But the one-year option that's been picked up that the Bucs can beg out of before a certain date, unless he gets hurt while he's playing, which them playing him shows that, you know, they know he should be back. As I said before in the show, I mean, you go back to the first half of the Saints game plus the 2 games prior, that's 10 quarters. Those are probably the 10 best quarters of football we've seen Jameis Winston play. Not just the throws he make, but the turnovers, the decisions. I mean, there was, you know, he did throw one pick against the Saints, but he was trying to make a play late. They were down, not a big deal. But as far as those 10 quarters he played, the 2.5 games preceding the second half against the Saints, he looks like a different guy. And, you know, DeSean Jackson wasn't there this week. It was Chris Godwin, which a lot of people have been clamoring for, saying we don't need DeSean Jackson, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. But just to be fair, Godwin and Jameis didn't get on the same page much either, as Godwin was targeted 10 times, only had one catch. And again, there's a lot of reasons for that. The Saints, to their credit and to the lack of credit for our coaching staff, made a lot of adjustments at halftime, and in the second half, Jameis was 3 of 12 or something like that. And I don't think he did anything dumb, but if you watch the game film, and I'm not one of these guys that has the All-22 queued up, you know, hours after the game, but there's a lot of people on Twitter who are, and there's good follows and things like that, and looking at the game film, which anybody can do, I mean, there wasn't anywhere to throw the ball. The Saints did a really good job of making halftime adjustments, and I think the lack of passing lanes was the biggest problem in the second half. It wasn't poor quarterback play or anything like that. The offensive line continues to be a disaster, and again, a bad game. I mean, we talked last week about how they're probably using their best five because people who have forgotten more about football than I'll ever know are there at practice every day and have decided that there's a reason Caleb Benenach should be playing and not Alex Kappa. Leonard Wester, same thing with Damar Dotson, although I don't think either of those guys, Benenach or Dotson, should be around much more. As of right now, that's what they're going with. But the offensive line hurts Jameis in two ways, because one, obviously he's under pressure quite a bit, which you can see just watching any series of downs. And then second of all, I mean, the running game is non-existent, and it's because, you know, you keep saying, oh, Peyton Barber, this, that. It's the offensive line again. Like, the offensive line is killing this offense. That the offense scores what it does is amazing. You look at hit at or behind the line of scrimmage, or not even hit, excuse me, tackled at or behind the line of scrimmage. Plays that are running plays for the Bucs, resulting in no gain or a loss, 26% for this team. That is worse than everybody in the league except for Atlanta. Only Atlanta has a higher rate of tackles allowed at or behind the line of scrimmage on running plays. And so, you know, the bad O-line begets a bad running game, which begets tougher things in the passing game. I mean, you look at the second half the other day, and, you know, the Saints, to their credit, shut down a lot of passing lanes. A lot easier to do that when you don't have to account much up front. And so, you know, this offense has been pretty good for the most part all season, but think about with a competent offensive line what they could be. And that's another reason, you know, and looking at the defense, it's a whole other thing, but that's another reason I think with Fangio from the Bears, he's an interesting candidate, even though he's a little bit older, and even though he's a defensive guy and everybody thinks you got to have an offensive guy. Now, if you have an offensive guy, whether it's Monken or somebody new, that can be, you know, he and Jameis are like joint at the hip and they're yin and yang and all that. If you have that relationship going and you have a head coach that can leave that be and do what Vic Fangio's done on defense with all these, with the Bears and the other places he's been, because that's where we need the help the most. I don't think our offense is that far off. But I think an offensive line upgrade, and it's not that easy, or everybody would do it. You know, they need two or three guys up there. And maybe it is, like I said, maybe it is Leonard Wester. Maybe it is Alex Kappa. We don't know because they don't play much. But if they don't play much, that what does that tell you? That the guys in front of them are so ineffective, and yet they can't get around them. So I don't know. But Jameis Winston, I think, has solidified his position as the quarterback of this team in 2019. I think Dirk Koetter has solidified his position as not the head coach in 2019. I think the Jason Light thing is up in the air. Email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, if you want. That's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. Looking ahead to the Ravens game, because there is actual football going on, and I will watch it, as will most of you, I imagine, because I watch the Bucks when they play no matter what. And it is a big game for the Ravens, who, again, are in a dogfight for the AFC wild card, outside chance at winning the AFC North. It will be Lamar Jackson the Bucks will see as the starting quarterback. Now, Joe Flacco is back and ready to go, but they've just said, you know what, we're going with Lamar. And I get it. I mean, if I had to win one game right now, and I had Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco, I'd probably go with Flacco. And you could argue, well, the Ravens do need to win one game right now because they're in a playoff race. But I don't think there's that much difference. And Joe Flacco's obviously not going to be there next year, whereas Lamar Jackson's their guy now, so it makes sense they're starting Lamar Jackson. And as well as he's played in his appearances to this point, the knock on him has been, well, he's faced really bad defenses so far. We'll see if the Bucs defense can buck that trend or not. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. And so, as far as the Bucs injuries, Justin Evans has a boot on as of today. He's still probably out. I can't get, like, excited. I'm sorry. I just can't get excited about it. I hate it. I want to get excited about Sunday. But at this point, I mean, the stuff we've talked about all throughout the show today is much more important than anything going on the field right now. That's just the way it is. I thought about, too, I made some plans this week. For those of you that listen weekly, and I appreciate the hell out of all of you who listen, even if it's sporadically, but for those of you that listen to the show weekly, you might remember before the season started how I was doing my whole cruise tracker. Remember? My wife booked a cruise for Wild Card Weekend. I'd never been on a cruise before. And I told her, no, that's cool. I mean, from what I'm told, they have satellites and stuff like that. You can watch the NFL on the cruise. Like, it's not like you're totally isolated with no contact with the outside world. Like, you can watch football on the cruise, right? Especially national TV. Like, maybe on a Sunday with 15 NFL games and you want to watch the Bucks, but oh, they only have this game, then maybe it's a problem. But for a playoff game where it's the nationally televised only game going at that time, those are all going to be on TV on the cruise. That's what I was assured. I said the only problem might be, you know, what if the Bucks win the South and they have a home game? Because I couldn't miss a Bucks home playoff game. Like, there's nowhere in the world I'd be other than my ass right in the middle of that stadium if the Bucks are hosting a playoff game. That's just the way it is. I told her that. And she kind of, like, you know, gave me a worried look. And she's like, well, I'm booking it, so what do you say? And I'm like, you know, I just kind of kicked the can down the road thinking, yeah, I'll just book it and we'll see what happens. But inside, I was nervous, remember? Like, I talked about this in the week, you know, the preseason and the week one and two shows, especially when they started out like they did. Like, oh, my God, I'm going to have this I'm either going to have to miss a Bucks home playoff game, which I don't consider an option, or I'm going to have to go see a mediator or some sort of marriage counselor at best, which also is not a great option. I was worried. And looking back now, that's just pretty funny, right? Like, I was like, what if the Bucks win the South? And you know what'll happen? I'll do the same damn thing again next offseason. Even if we're supposed to be however far away we are, I'm going to say, you know what? Bucks could win this division. And they really could. I mean, like, the NFL changes so much year to year. In fact, the Saints, having clinched the NFC South, just won it back-to-back for the first time in their franchise history. Bucks have never done that either. And I would have to look up Carolina and Atlanta, but I don't think it's probably happened more than once or twice with them either. And of course, the NFC South only been around since 2002. The Bucks Super Bowl year was the first year of this four-division alignment they've had. And it's fine for the most part, but like I said, the only thing I don't like about it is automatically giving the division winners a top four seed when you have divisions that are so tiny. You know, the old three division setup where you had five teams in each division and then three division champs and three wild cards, that was a little bit different. You didn't see that discrepancy so often of a wild card having a better record than the division winner. But now with four, whoever that fourth division winner is always like 9-7. And there's always a wild card team that's 11-5 or something like that. It's wrong, in my opinion. So anyway, we'll talk more next week. Things will reveal themselves little by little as we approach the offseason. I still don't think the Bucks will make a move on Cutter before the season ends. I mean, it ends in 2 weeks. I mean, I suppose it's possible. But in the meantime, despite the lack of high stakes on these games for our franchise, and you could say, oh, draft position, but that just means rooting against them, and I don't really do that. I've never been a big, you know, you gotta hope they lose for the draft pick, man. Like, 8th, 5th, 6th, it'll be something like that. You know, 9th. Does it make that much of a difference? I don't think it does. It made a difference when it was like 1 or 2 back when the Bucks played their entire practice squad against the Saints in Week 17, the fall before they drafted Jameis. If they win that Saints game, they get Mariota instead. That was a direct you could point to and say, big difference. But for the most part, I don't think it matters that much whether you're picking 6th or 8th or 5th or something like, you know. So I'm just going to watch the game and enjoy it for the fact that they only give us 16 of these out of 365 days every year. They only play a Buccaneers game on 16 of them. For those 3 hours, 16 times a year, that's what I'm going to do. And my son, he's only 7. He doesn't really know any better about the playoffs and all that. He just wants to see the Bucks win, so I'm going to, you know, pump it up for him. And we're going to have a good time, and I encourage you guys to do the same, whether it's with your children or your own parents or friends or whatever. Just get together, have fun, and do all that stuff. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform and allowing me to be on this website, which gets in front of all of you guys, the best place on the internet, bar none, for Bucks coverage, joebucksfan.com. Thanks to our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford, always for taking care of us. The Dunedin Pirates, the semi-pro team. I have not gone out for practice yet. They have a preseason game tomorrow in Leesburg. Not tomorrow, on Saturday. Which I am out for, as I am still weighing my options of whether or not to retire at age 38 or play another season of semi-pro football. But if you want to play football, it is certainly not too late. The regular season doesn't start until the last weekend in January. Go to DunedinPirates.com if you're interested in playing real, honest-to-goodness, not flag. I'm talking about real football, helmet, pads, all that stuff. Against teams from other parts of the state of Florida in the 16-team Florida Football Alliance. Or go to Florida Football Alliance. Or no, go to FFAfootball.org to check out the league website. Go to DunedinPirates.com to check out the team website. Andy Villamarzo is a good friend, and he's the GM. Tell him you heard it from me, and he'll probably start you at quarterback for a couple series. But in the meantime, for all of you, wherever you are, as we get ready for the holidays and all that, we got three of these Bucks games left to go. Let's enjoy it. Be safe. Take care of yourselves. I will talk to you next week. But that is the Free Stretch, Week 15 edition for this week. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.